Well, hello everybody. all the readings and everything, I'm okay now. I've had my meeting. That's good. And my name's Joe, and they call me Joe Veg because I was in the vegetable business when I first came in. There was a couple of other guys in the rooms. One was Joe, he was a taxi driver, and then there was Joe M, he was a tailor. So they knew I was in the veg game, so they called me Joe Veg. Joe the tailor, I shouldn't think we've got any more tailors, have we, in this year and age? I don't know. Anybody know anybody t who's a tailor? I don't. Anyway. So, Gamblers Anonymous. I first remember reading about it in the newspaper on a Sunday. I can see it as clear as anything in front of me now. It was a double braid spread, as Gamblers Anonymous had come to the UK, and it was brought over by Henry and his wife from she was in New York. And they met up with the Reverend Gordon Moody, who was on the church's council for gambling. And I remember reading it thinking, ah, them poor people, and a vicar, a vicar's running it, a vicar's starting it. I suppose they sing hymns, say a few prayers, send you home and tell it to be a good boy. I don't know. I didn't know what it was. So that was in 64. And then in 71, I found myself in all sorts of trouble. And out of curiosity, nothing else, I phoned. I phoned, and when I phoned, when I because in those days there was no internet, there was no mobile phones. So what one had to do was use a, dial the number. And I remember actually whispering down the phone in case anybody should hear that I was phoning this GA, this Gamblers Anonymous. And the fellow was very good the other end. His name was Wally, and he was a Millwall docker. And what he said to me was, "What's your name?" I told him my name. And he said, "You done your money, Joe?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "It's a bastard, isn't it?" And he asked me to come along to the meeting. So I went along to the meeting on a Tuesday night. No money, no petrol in the car. Her indoors was on Valium and all sorts of other things. Now, in my business, I need cash. I need readies. I get up very, very early in the morning, up past 4 or 5 o'clock, to go to the old Covent Garden, buy the gear and take it back to the pitches in the West End of London. And very good business. So I get there, and I didn't like it. I went there because I was in trouble, and I soon found out that there was no money to be given. There was no advice to be given. There was no way to gamble sensibly, or what to do or what not to do. And the other things was, which I didn't like the people. I was looking around the room and I wasn't listening to what they were saying. I was just looking at the, it might have been a Polish man, might have been a Scotchman, might have been a lady, might have been somebody overweight. And the other silly thing about that first meeting was, which didn't make sense, was that you had to stop gambling and pay back the money. Hold on, hold on. How am I going to pay back the money if I don't win it? Where's the money going to come from if I don't win it? And I think I went back once more, and I didn't like it. Anyway, as clever and as cunning as we are, I went and found a few more, some more money. And I went back to work, and I tried to control what I was doing with the gambling. So now money betting even monies, a money betting red or black when it comes up high or low. And then halfway through, about 2 or 3 months later, I found myself in a snooker hall playing snooker with a guy. And I think I won the first game. He won the next one. He then won the next one. And then he said, "We play double or nothing." So I said, "Okay." And he won. And then he said, We played Double or Nothing again, Joe. So I said, okay. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you two black start. So he gave me the 14 start and I got beat again. And now, to keep myself looking okay and to keep up my whatever it was I thought I imagined myself to be, I give him the money, which left me with nothing again. So now I'm back to square one. I've got to go home. You know, I've got to have a row. Because when I've done my money, Joe is very dangerous. I'm dangerous with my tongue. I get diarrhea of the mouth. I get violent. I don't get violent with people. I get violent with furniture, crockery, you know. And one of the things in the book, as you may remember, it says some members went through terrifying experiences before they was to stop. And I thought, I never went through any terrifying experiences. And then I remembered, yes, the terrifying experiences I went through was I couldn't play. I couldn't, where am I going to get the next lot of money from? That was the terrifying experience for me. So about that was in the beginning of June when I first came, 2 weeks before Millreath won the Derby in 1971. And 7-2 chance written by Jeff Lewis. And I had it with something else and doesn't matter whether it won or lost anyway. So in the mid-September, Anne, who's for some reason had a few quid tucked away somewhere, we go to Spain. I'll finish on this early bit by and by. So we go to Spain, and when we get to Spain, we've gone to see our sister and my brother-in-law, and we're in a place called Benidorm. And I find myself in the afternoon sitting around a swimming pool playing Kaluki. I don't know if you have that game in America, Kaluki. I love that game. It's a good game. It's a skill game. You've got to be, you know, sharp, and it's a good gambling game as well. So I'm playing away. I'm smoking my cigar and having my Cuba Libre, and Anne comes along and she says, "You said you'd take me shopping in Alicante." So my brother-in-law's a bookmaker. There's a couple of scoundrels there. There's somebody else who works at the races. There's another fella who's on the run. And I don't want to mug myself off. But something come into my head. And I thought to myself, she might open up her mouth and say, "Why did you go to that meeting?" So to stop her saying that, I got up. And we went to Alicante and we had a terrible row. Terrible, terrible row. And that was that. On the way back on the plane coming home, I just happened to have the handbook, the GA handbook, in the luggage somewhere in my pocket. And I started to read it. And where in the beginning I'd answered about 7 or 8 questions of the 20 questions, I began to break it down and I went back to the meetings. Now I start to listen. Now I start to see the reflection of myself in what other people were saying. And I start to, one day, I never had a bet. I still went in the bookmakers. I still went in the betting shop. I still looked at the races. I still looked at the results. But I didn't have a bet. And then I didn't have another bet. I didn't have another bet. So my last bet, ladies and gentlemen, was September in Alicante in 1971. And I come back to the meetings and I come back to the meetings. You see, where I was always out and gambling, like if I could give you a day, maybe on a Saturday, I will be in a betting shop, I will be gambling. In the evening, I will go to the dog track. After the dog track, I will go on to a spiel and play Kaluki or 10 card rummy, 11 of 4 rummy, or maybe a bit of poker, something like that. And then after the spiel, I will go to the News of the World, which was in Fleet Street, where all the newspapers was. on a Sunday, early Sunday morning, and I would play dice with the printers. And if there was still money there after that, then I would go on to the Kray Twins place. There was a couple of villains in London years ago, the Esmeralda's Bar in Knightsbridge, where there's diamond rings and fur coats and people with bow ties on and an upmarket gaff. And after that, I'll get back to Piccadilly for 5 o'clock in the morning on the Sunday morning to look at the newspapers to see the dog results, because that's the only way you could find out the dog results or the racing results from the day or the night before was by reading them in the newspaper the next day. So on the early on the Sunday morning, I would go and look at the and try and find the results. Now, the interesting thing, I don't know if anybody's else done it, I don't think I've heard this before, but what I used to do was I used to have the dog bet before I went to the meeting, write it out, put it in the in with the bookmaker, and on the dog bet it would be any to come. So if any of those dogs won, any to come, to have a bet at another meeting, and I would put the other meeting down with the favourites who I wanted to back there. So I'm looking at two lots of results. Yeah, there you are. Loved it. I like the people, I like the atmosphere, and one of the things in the 20 questions is, is gambling affecting your reputation? Not, I gamble. That's my reputation. I gamble. But then Dr. Jack, I don't know if you any of you remember Dr. Jack. Dr. Jack used to say, used to quote a Scottish poem from a poet, Rabbi Burns. If we could see ourselves as other people see us. Well, and I thought about that when Jack said that. And what I God, what did people must have thought of me? A lunatic. But the thing in the West End and where I come from in the South London, if you was like what I was, you was called a sufferer. People knew you as a sufferer. And of course, I could get in all the clubs, I could get in all the joints. Not because I was a villain, they was all run by villains, but if you was a speeder, if you was a gambler, you could get in, because that's what the clubs was based on in those days, was on the gambling. So there we are. So I'll move on a bit if I may. That was in 71. And then in 77, I found myself on an aeroplane flying to America with the Reverend Gordon Moody, the man who I laughed at when I read the newspaper in 1964. Him and Dr. Jack and Anita, who was the National Secretary in the UK, I found myself on an aeroplane going to the 20th anniversary of GA in Chicago. Wow, policemen with guns. We didn't have guns in England, yellow cabs up on the Sears Roebuck Tower at the time was the biggest building in the world. But somewhere along the line, you'll find it yourselves, and you've probably been there. Somewhere, people touch you. And we happened to sit down to lunch at this convention, and a rabbi said a prayer. What do you call it? Just before you eat, I can't forget what it's called. Anyway, he says the prayer just before you eat. And this is along the lines of what he said. As the children of Israel was led out from slavery into the promised land, so you hear today, you compulsive gamblers are being led out of compulsive gambling into the world of recovery. And the tears was rolling down my face. And Anita, oh, and there was another man there called Jerry. I'll tell you about Jerry in a minute. And I was touched. I was so touched. And then when I got back to England, my brother met me, met me at London Airport, and he'd bought me this car which I'd fancied for a long time. He turned up in it, and it was American V8 Ford, a Ford Monarch, but it was on our side. It was supposed to be imported to Australia, this American car, and that was lovely. Sometime later, I'm in a petrol station filling up this car, and in those days, the man used to put the or the lady used to put the petrol in the car for you. And he's putting the petrol in the car, and he said, "I love your car." I said, "Yeah, it's a V8 engine." She said, "Wow, how many to the miles to the gallon do you get out of this car?" And I said to him, "I mustn't find out." You know, and that's the same as not coming back to the meetings. I mustn't find out whether I can do what those people missing are doing. So I just briefly pop on to Jerry, if I may. Now, this Jerry was a snorer. He come from Birmingham and he put himself up front. I think there was about five or six of us went to to Chicago, and he put his anyway. And he knew that I knew that he was a snorer. And I'd used to give him a wide berth. Now, at the 77 convention, they used to do tapes of the like this is being taped. They used to do the little square tapes. And by and by, about 4 years later, we had a convention in the UK, the first one, and they'd made tapes of the people speaking. A fellow called Tony P. He was the man who used to do the tape, used to do the tapes because he was into computers in those days. He had a place around the corner from Harrods. And I'm in the car one day, and I had to go a long journey somewhere, and I thought, oh, I'll put one of the tapes on. So I put one of the tapes on, and who is it? This bloody Jerry. Oh no. Anyway, I leave it on. We get to a traffic light and I stop and I clapped. He was bloody marvellous. I'd never listened to him before because, I said I didn't like him. But his message was wonderful. So then Anne and I got married, and we've been together since I was 25. I'm now 35. We get married on a Monday. I don't go to work on the Monday. We go to Wandsworth Town Hall and we get married. Where's that clock? Is the clock there? Am I okay? Okay, I'll keep going. We get married at the Town Hall. There's just a few people there. And that was on the Monday. So we go home Monday afternoon, have a kiss and a cuddle. And on the Monday night, we went to a GA meeting. Anne went to the Gammonon and I went to the GA because we wouldn't been married because, the link was there between our happiness and the GA meetings. So pushing on, that was my, I've told you sort of like about my adolescence, I suppose. And then like you have, you grow up a bit and then you have a middle age. And in my middle age, when I was 55, I'm still rocking and rolling. I always sound close to the wind. I like doing skullduggery, nothing violent, nothing really, really bad. But I like buying, container loads of gear, this, that, and the other. And I went to prison. And when the judge sent me to prison, when he sentenced me, he gave me 18 months, and I'd done 9 months in an open jail. And one day it was a bit crowded in the nick, and they called out on a Friday. They called out for the Jews for a service, or Saturday, I can't remember. They called out for the Muslims, and they called out for the Christians if they wanted to go to the chapel on a Sunday. I go to the chapel on a Sunday. And this preacher, I think he was a Methodist. He had an earring. He was a bit over the top, ponytail, but he knew what he was doing. He knew how to handle lifers and people, things like that. And then I got moved again because he played before his sermon. I don't know if any of you have heard this. I think I got the name right. It's called M People. And he played it from the pulpit. Search for the hero inside yourself. Search for the secrets you hide. Search for the hero inside yourself until you find the key to your life. Wow. Oh, don't. Oh, don't. I was so happy that day. Something clicked. I'm not talking about Jesus or God or anything. I'm talking about the higher power. The higher power, which I used to stand at dog tracks and in betting shops when there was a photo finish. Please, God, give my one out first. And that was the same. It was the same fella who I found in these rooms. My higher power. Wonderful. So that was my middle age, I suppose, and still going to conventions, going to Ireland, met wonderful people. And I used to go, now I'm not in the veg game anymore. I've gone into another business. Used to go to America, used to take classic cars to America. I remember meeting up with Monsignor Dunn. Has anybody ever met with Monsignor Dunn? And my club in Pall Mall in London, the RAC Club, was affiliated to the New York Athletic Club. I used to stay in the New York Athletic Club. I rang up for the Monsignor. He said, I'll come round and we'll have lunch. Wow. And he bought a couple of, never had it before. He bought a couple of pecan pies. It was getting near Christmas. He bought these pecan pies for me and Anne. Oh, God in heaven. Wonderful. Okay, so then we go on. We're moving on. We're moving on. And now along comes the internet. I'm out of time, Dan. Am I okay? Very quickly, I'll be.
Yeah, you have a couple more minutes if you want. We're
Okay,
right at
right.
time. Thank you.
And now I'm in my old age and I'm still going to the meetings. But now, what's happened? The internet on the phones, and I'm hearing stories about a fella told the meeting at the wording group where I'm going that he was on a half marathon and he was gambling on his phone while he was doing the half marathon. And people say they take it in bed with them. They lay next to their wife with it turned on silent, and they're gambling away. And I remember a girl called Sylvie. She said that she was in the casino gambling, and she never got up off the seat, and she wet herself. Nowadays, they tell me, if you want to go to the loo, you take it with you. They sit on the toilet and they do it. They drive 20-ton trucks, and I should be doomed, absolutely doomed, if I was just to go click, It's been very good. Lots of memories, lots of people. My friend Brian Shoes, he influenced me. I think one of the people who influenced me the most was a fellow called Irish John. Irish John was on a roof, on a church roof, nicking lead, the lead on the roof, and he fell and he broke his back or something, and he was in hospital, and we went and saw him, and one thing and another, and then one day at the meeting, because he was down and out in those days, used to live in a hostel, and then he found a one room, the council found him a one room place. And he was okay. And then one day he said, now I met people who come to the meetings in Lamborghinis, Rolls Royces. Irish John used to come on his bike. And Irish John said, this program has given me a soft pillar and a full belly. Wow. Wow. So there we are. I've learnt as I go along. Dan's trying to clap. I'll tell you this last one, if I may, because I've just gone over a lot of stuff. We used to go down to the open before I went to prison, we used to go down to the prisons once a month and give talk. We'd go down, five or six of us from London, and I met a fella, two or three people, and one of them was called Gypsy Bill. And Gypsy Bill, I got friendly with him. He was a roofer and a bricklayer, and he'd done a bit of work at our house and got very, very friendly with Rose, his wife, and I helped him out a couple of times. I'll finish on this, Dan. And then we're at the meeting one night in Victoria and in the Abbey Community Centre in Westminster, and he's in the chair, and they used to call up people one at a time in those days. And it's getting late in the evening, and he hasn't called me. And then all of a sudden, he said, "And now I'd like to call somebody who's a very good friend of mine. He came to visit me in prison. We got on very well. Him and my wife got on well together." And I thought, Frank, not Frank, Bill, you're laying it on a bit thick here, you know. And he's a very, very good member of Gamblers Anonymous. He's a wonderful speaker, and I'd like to call. And it wasn't me. It wasn't me. So it's all about learning, isn't it? It's all about being knocked down and getting back up one day at a time. This obstacle course of life. And they tell me at the moment the cost of living is very expensive for everybody. But I say to myself, Joe, your cost of living is on a Saturday morning when you put your money in the bag. That's the cost of your living. My name's Joe. Thank you.
Bravo, bravo. Absolutely amazing. Phenomenal. Thank you so much, Joe. I absolutely enjoyed that. And it's so amazing that I get to listen to someone who was a part of the beginning, who knew the founders, who was with the founders. That's amazing to me. It's got to be a very thrilling statement for you too. To have known where this program came from and where it is today. It's got to be absolutely fantastic for you. Thank you so much. I was absolutely inspired by you. And you are very candid. You are very easy to get along with. I can understand. I enjoyed it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Before I go to people who want to ask the question, there's a question that came in from a person in the chat, and I want to ask that question first. I'll get right back at you, Frank. Okay, the person I asked, I like to ask Joe, when you first got a sponsor and was guided through the 12-step program, he said that there was no real mention of recovery steps in your share. Though you actually sponsored new GA members and helped them work the 12 steps, which is the essence of true recovery. He wanted to remain anonymous.
I've never been through the steps with anybody, but I've been through the steps with myself. So, look at it constantly, keep changing. And I don't sponsor people. What I do is I look out for them. I keep in touch with them. And yeah, that's what I do.
All right, that's your answer. Okay, Frank, the cyclist, you're next.
Hello, everyone. My name is Frank S., and very grateful, recovering compulsive gambler. Today marks 5,639 days since my last bet. And oh my goodness, I am so glad to be here. So glad to see you, Joe. I've had
Thank
the
you.
great fortune of meeting Joe at least twice. I think I know in the Irish, Scottish convention, I think in the Irish convention. Anyway, he's as lively and friendly and lovely and entertaining and joyful. In person as he is here on Zoom. And when I heard that you were speaking, I said, I don't care what's going on. I'll make sure that I'm here to see you. And I hope I get to see you in the Scottish Convention. Dan and I are coming there, in late September, early, I'm sorry, late October for that. But anyway, your stories were, I mean, you guys have all the great colorful names. We just have like Dan the Man. But boy, the way you describe the names and all, well, Joe Veg, of course, starting with yours and all the others, that's so cool. But I was so touched by your share about this, the idea of open-mindedness and how this character, Jerry, who never wanted to listen to at all, how we have a tendency, I know I do, to prejudge before, we give people the opportunity to really share their message or share who they are. And I mean, I thought that was just a humbling experience for you to be able to say, hey, I heard this guy on this cassette, and he had so many amazing things to share. And that just is reminding me to keep an open mind about things like that. That was a really beautiful story, and I'm glad you shared that with us. I do want to ask you, though, and it's a question I ask from time to time. By the way, I'm here in sunny California. That's the Pacific Ocean, Joe. And did you, I don't know, you can ask a answer later too if you ever came out to one of the LA conventions. But and I know you're having a heat wave in the UK as well. This is our normal weather, which you go through. But anyway, I want to ask you this question. Tell me this, if you know, it's almost a silly question, but it kind of brings to light certain things. If you never were afflicted with the disease of gambling, and had to go through what you went through, what kind of life do you think you might have had?
I'd have been in trouble. I'd have got nicked more often. I always wanted to be a bookmaker. I always wanted to go to the races every day in a Jag, be a big shot. When I came to GA in 71, Frank, I had 17 trilbies, 17 hats. I had four or five different overcoats. I had smart shoes. And I wanted to go and look and, be somebody who I wasn't. But at the same time, Frank, we didn't have a bathroom. When we wanted a bath, we had to go down the baths, the public baths to have a bath. So, yeah, I don't know where I'd be, Frank. I don't know. But thank God I am where I am. And it was good to hear from you again. I look forward to seeing you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. All right, Larry K.
Thank you, my name's Larry, compulsive gambler. I got a question for you, Joe. First of all, I loved your share. I could listen to you all day trying to l learn other languages, so it's beautiful. But anyway, my question is, you alluded to the terrifying experiences, and I can relate to that. I first came in '73. I was just a teenager, and I used to steal money to gamble. I was a horse player. I also bet the dogs when horses weren't available. But my question is, you had talked about the way it is now with our casinos in our pocket, potentially. What we had to go through to make a bet, as you shared the story with the bookmaker and calling him on the phone and then getting the results the next day. I'm just wondering, back in those days when gambling was very difficult to even get bets down, do you think that that was part of our addiction, was being addicted to the process of getting money and making the bet?
Yeah. Well, you see, just after the war, in the 50s and the 60s, there was the only entertainment was a cinema. And people from my background didn't go to the theatre. They didn't go to the ballet. They went to the cinema. And your dad took you to the dog track, lifted you over the turnstile, in the 50s. And going to all these other places, when I stopped in. Back when I said I stopped in that September thereafter, where I used to go to or travel all these places, Larry, I started going to meetings every day to fill the space. They say, what do you do? Never mind about the money I lost. What about all the time you lost? And how do you fill that time now? Well, back in those days, I used to do the meetings all the time. I remember going to two meetings in one day in New York, And because there was no gambling on a Sunday in those days, Larry, we used to have the poker game in my house on a Sunday afternoon. It was just
Amazing.
something we did. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your share.
All right, thank you. Oh, did that go? Okay, Keith.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe. Yeah, my name is Keith, Compulsive Gambler. I've known Joe since I think I went to my first meeting in Victoria in 1980. And yeah, I can listen to you still all day long. There's so many things. I was sorry, I was just I guess sorry, I think it was it Larry saying something? And yeah, I get it. We're two nationalities separated by a common language, because you speak in a very English-centric way. And it's Kaddish, by the way, is what we say before we eat, just so you know, because your Yiddish is going downhill. I'm worried about you, Joe. The question I had to ask you is, I've seen you start meetings. You know, I mean, as far as the southeast, south coast of this country, and you still take such an active, an active role, which is absolutely amazing. The question I have for you, for me, from the meetings we used to go to back in those days, back in the Iron Lung in Victoria, it was a very much, we didn't talk about the steps. You know, we read the 12 steps, we did those. So we didn't really talk about emotions. We were just, it was very much about, I've done my bollocks again. And it's interesting because, a meeting you started in Eastbourne, when I go there now, people talk in a very different way, which I think, I don't know, I think it's healthy. But have you seen GA, particularly in this country, sort of change? Into perhaps looking more at the feelings and how people are, rather than the fact that we all did our bollocks. That's my question.
Yeah, well, enormously it's changed, you know, and everything's changed, hasn't it? And the only thing that hasn't changed is the handbook, which I think needs updating. I was fortunate enough to get the Just for the Day I Will Not Gamble. That was my idea to get Anita to get that put on. And I see they use that in America now, which is very good. But the You see, when like last Saturday morning, there was 12 people in the room. None of them told war stories. They all talked about recovery. They all talked about their emotions, how they're feeling, and they ask them now, you know, what sort of week have you had? Da 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 da. It is totally different. In those early days, you're talking about. I wanted to hear, you know. I wanted to be the friend of the fellow who'd lost the most, you know, but the most money. But now I'm interested in the fellow who's, you know, who's lost it up here rather than in his pocket. Thank you.
Okay, Nicholas.
Hello. Hi, thanks for your share. It was really good. Really want to get back in the swing of things. Recently, fell off wagon this 1 a.m. I was at 48 days, but I had relapse, and for some trivial reason, for a bet, as you know. And it's too easy in this day and age, you know. So I just was feeling mad and overwhelmed, and I made that mistake, and it was miserable. It wasn't fun. You know, I'm like, why am I doing this thing that's not fun? And why am I doing this thing that I don't understand. You know, I even heard the voice in my head to tell me no. But after coming here, you know, I have hope again, and you've gave it to me, and I know I can get back up, and I'll just keep going to meetings. I think I'm going to go to another one today. I mean, you said you've done that before. You've gone to multiple. I think I could go to another one later. There's a lot of time in the day, so I really appreciate your share, and I'm going to keep coming back and take another 24.
Yep, meetings make and meetings makers make it. Sorry, Joe.
Thank you, Nicholas. Nicholas, there's no tens in this program. No one's a 10. You know, I if those 11 people who was there Saturday, probably 75% of them had gone back and had a bet, but fortunately they came back to the meetings. So you see, when it gets older, Nicholas. It's a bit like your president's missiles. You know, when he presses the button, it's going to hit the target. And if you've got it in your brain that you're going to do it, you're going to do it. But unfortunately, Unfortunately, we know where you're going to land up. That's why we're at the meetings. That's why we're here today, because we knew that you was going to come back. Thank you.
Good saying. That's good, Joe. I like that. Patricia.
Thank you, Joe, for your share. My question is, hope that you don't mind, it's a hypothetical question. If somebody give you, you know, big cash money and you can do whatever you can, whatever you want in casino, I know any kind of gambling that can apply. You think you can stay there and maybe have a nice lunch, or you might just walk out scared, or you think, okay, it's okay, I can handle it, I can make some money. What could happen to you if that's the case? Thank you.
I go back to the car where the fella asked me how many miles I get to the gallon, my dear. I mustn't find out. I mustn't find out. Yeah. It's interesting. Oh, of course I fantasized about having a big win if I won £1 million. And I said jokingly recently at a meeting, and they said you can't even do the lottery. And I had said, if you do the lottery and you win it, the millions, you have to come back to the meeting and share the money out.
All right, small feet.
Yeah, Smokey Joe, Dr. Moody met in Boston, not New York, Boston. It's in the books. They met in Boston. That's where they met. He was, they met at a church in Boston, not New York.
Okay.
The question I got for you is your brother, man, Jamie, I love the guy. I love that guy. I know you're from Liverpool, right, Joe?
No, I'm from London.
Well, okay. I'm wrong, dude. Okay, so draw the picture. Give me 3 points. You had one of the points. Give me 3 points in a day at a time yesterday, but today. In a few hours, it'd be tomorrow, and the day ahead, you'd be a day ahead of 6 hours ahead of me. But why is it so hard for somebody to come back? And a second question is, why don't more meetings have valuable host just put anybody in the chair that talks about the recovery program? And the third point is, how far do you drive today to pick somebody up? And in London, do they do any 12-step balls? This is old school. This is going back 50 years ago. It used to be doing 12-step calls for gambling like they did for Alcohol Anonymous. So what's your opinion, Joe?
Okay. Well, the first thing is, when I wake up in the morning, I'm so grateful to read the good morning from Carol. I've never been on Carol's meeting from South Africa, but that's wonderful, the good morning one. And of course, the reflection, which Dan read out earlier on, or somebody read out earlier on, they're terrific. So they set me up for the day. Regarding the going and 12-stepping and things like that, it's all done now with the WhatsApp. It's all done with, and there's different agencies. There was no agencies. There may be 4, 5, 6 different agencies in the UK now. Who, you know, before you even get to Gamblers Anonymous, there's people out there who are being paid by the bookmakers to help them recovery. So Yeah, it was a you've given a complicated three questions to a complicated person, which is me. And sometimes it's not easy to answer. Thank you.
Smokey, you have your hand up again. Did you want to say something else?
No, maybe
Okay.
maybe Denise can answer those questions.
Well, thank you, Smokey. Appreciate it. Okay.
Denise?
So let's move on. Denise?
I am just the host.
Okay.
Who else would like to ask a question? We still have a little time. We it's 4 o'clock. Anybody who has to go is more than welcome to leave. We have just a few minutes to ask a question if you want to. You have an expert here who knows the program through and through. So if you have a question, you should take advantage of it while you can. Okay, we usually don't have a second bite of the apple, but okay, Nicholas.
I just have one quick question for you. Seeing as I recently did relapse, what is your advice for someone to get back into the program? Is the meetings, or I'm curious.
Nicholas, only you can make that decision. The sad thing about the bottom line, this is the bottom line, the retention is diabolical. The retention, people coming back and staying off for some time, it's always been the same. Maybe 2-3% in 1,000, I don't know, maybe less. It's very difficult to get back. But you see, the tragedy of it is that you only come back when you're in trouble. That's, and there's, you see, when I go to the meetings, there's maybe three aspects to it. Number one is that when I was doing a prison group, I was going in doing a prison group in Fulde in Sussex. And I was going there week after week after week from the outside on a Wednesday. They used to have it after they had their dinner. They used to let me in, and they set me up. And yeah. So for about 2 or 3 weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks running, nobody turned up. I used to have regulars, and then they was released, and then nobody turned up. And then I went there one day, and a screw said, "Oh, you got a customer today, Mr. R." So I said, "Oh, that's good." He said, "But you're pleased about that, aren't you, Joe?" So I said, "I knew he was coming." Why I go to the meetings today? One, because I know somebody's going to come. I know they're going to come. Two, I want to be there when those like your good selves have been out there at it and had a relapse and tell me what it's like if by not coming to the meetings, you slip into having a relapse. And number three, I want to be there to listen to the success and the happiness of those who have stayed off.
Yeah.
It'll all work out, Nicholas. It'll all work out. Just let go of it. Just let it go of it, the first thing in the book, right? In the book is the steps, the gist for the day, the sponsorship, da 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 da. On the first page, it says, if he or she would follow a simple program to the best of their ability. Keep it simple. Come back, keep it simple. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you,
Joe.
Joe. Thank you, Nick. Oh. Go ahead, Nicholas.
I was just saying, thanks, Joe. That's excellent advice. I definitely just gonna keep coming back, reread the book, and I got the big GA book here. I haven't read through it yet. These stories really help me out a lot and make me feel like I have hope. And you know what? I definitely think I can come around on this time around. Thank you.
All right. Okay, Pete, you have a second question
Yeah,
for Diane?
it's not actually a question. I was just going to put, because of what Nicholas was saying, one of Joe's fantastic, Joe has a lot of fantastic sayings that I quote. And One of them put someone asking him after 55 years, or probably over 50 back then, how many meetings he does, and a week. You know, do you still? Why does he still need to go to meetings? And he said, "I go to 3 meetings a week. I only need two, but I don't know which two." I mean, that's Joe Veg. Perfect.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, that makes math very clever. That makes a lot of sense. So go to them all. I like that. All right, are we all anybody else have a question? You can double dip, I suppose. Well, I truly, truly enjoyed that. I absolutely. Oh, okay, Peter, go ahead.
My name is Peter. I'm a compulsive gambler. Just want to say another one of Joe. What's your best meeting?
The next
Next one.
one.
But I haven't got any questions for Joe. I always love, to listen to Joe. But just want to say, obviously, I've been touched by Nicholas. I believe the problem isn't disease. The problem is that I don't want to treat my disease. This is the problem, because if well, I'm like I've got a high blood pressure. If I forget one tablet, I will go back home, that no matter where I am, to take that pill. Do I gonna do it with the same with recovery program? I doubt it, So yeah, I'm gonna finish there. Thank you.
All right, Peter, thank you. Hi, Don. Don.
Yes, hi, this is Don A, compulsive gambler. Thank you so much, Joe, for your story. We tend to focus a lot on the recovery program, and not enough on the Unity program. What are your thoughts about the Unity program?
Well, it's there. It's there. And you see, I can't spell Gamblers Anonymous. I've been very successful in life, in business. I can't spell it. And some of the things I don't understand when I read them. And yeah, I haven't got a lot to say on that one. Thank you. Ask me another one, Dan.
All right. Thank you, Don.
Okay,
Oh,
sorry.
did Joe want me to ask him another question?
Yes, he did.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. I'm Don, not Dan. Dan is our
Oh,
great
sorry,
leader
Don.
here.
Sorry, Don.
No worries, Joe. Okay, then. What's the benefit of working through the recovery program for you, or what do you suggest for other people? Why work through the recovery program?
Well, it's a bit like an athlete, They go out and jog and train and do a little bit, but they don't do the full thing. A boxer would do some shadow boxing, or a swimmer would do 4 or 5 lengths. And with the recovery program, that's how it is with me. I keep myself fit with it. I don't do the whole lot. I just keep active with it, keep in training with it, and there's nothing repetitive about it. It's different all the time. It's every I could probably come on and talk to you again next week, and I will be in a different total mood than I am tonight, and that's how I am also with the with the, should I do four? Should I do make that financial mo oh hold on, I don't want to do the moral one today. I fancy being naughty today. I don't want to do step four today. But then I go back and say, oh no, that was wrong. And of course, the one where it says made amends wherever possible, except so to would do would injure those others. So the amends, the first and only amends, is to myself. If I make amends to myself, and then it sprinkles, Dr. Jack used to say, if you put perfume on yourself, it will spill over onto other people. But if you put crap on yourself, it will also spill over onto other people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I have a question. How important is it to definitely claim your powerlessness? How important is that to the beginning, to the before anything else, before you start the steps, before you start writing? How important is it to just claim total and absolute powerlessness?
It's not I don't know. It's in the beginning it was definitely the meetings, but the powerlessness is acceptance, I think. You know that there's going to be no end product if I do it. There's, you know, there can only be me being secretive, and you know, and some days I'm still secretive. You know, there's some days, you know, I don't want to tell people this or tell people that. But the powerlessness, you know, I'm a grown man, I'm strong, you know, I can do different things. Powerless, powerless. But what does it say after the word powerless? Came to believe in a higher power greater than myself. And you know, yeah, it's a complicated program for complicated people. Yeah, it is. It's you know, it's
Beautiful.
no, it's all that.
So,
It's all up and down. You know.
yes, absolutely. As to powerlessness, when you do powerlessness, you have to have a higher power. Because you have to have something to lean on when you give it up. When you give up the power, when you get into the power, you have to have something to replace it. You got to have a higher power. Because
But what I avoid is telling people to find the higher power or look for the higher power.
absolutely.
I just mention it from time to time, you know,
Absolutely. Because you
because
got to
otherwise
find
you
your
think,
thing.
if, you know, I think, oh, that's a goddy place, you know, I don't want to
Absolutely.
go to a goddy place.